The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart, brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
We hope that you'll visit us on our website, the Open to Hope site, as well as our blog, thegriefblog.com. And Heidi, you want to give a little pitch for your Facebook and talk a little bit about what's going on there?
Well, the foundation has a Facebook page, so if you go to Open to Hope Foundation on Facebook, you can become a friend, and then you can kind of get all these updates about what our authors are doing and what shows we're having on and new YouTubes that are up. So it really keeps you up in the loop about everything that we're doing at Open to Hope and at the Grief Blog.
Right. So we hope you'll sign up for that as well as for our newsletter. Well, Heidi, we have a little show shift today. We've got a couple of guests, but one of our guests isn't going to make it, and Kay Salk. And so we're going to have Scott. What's Scott's last name?
Nagel.
Scott Nagel. And he's going to be great because he has been a hospice minister, and he's also been a minister for very, very many years and is involved with a new magazine. And most exciting, we have a guest coming all the way from England today, from Berkhamsted, where I went out to visit her. And she's going to be on the show as our first guest. And Heidi, why don't we get started with her? Because sometime during the show, we're going to take a little break for you folks. Because Valerie Sobel, or somebody from the Andre Sobel River of Life program, is going to come on and talk about something they're doing. They're going to have an essay contest for kids who have had traumatic illness. So we'll kind of break in and have them come on for a minute and talk about
okay.
that one.
And I love that you, I've got to say one thing before I introduce Alex. I love that you guys met, because all too often we get to know our guests so well, but we never ever see them. You know, it's like the age of the Internet, where you get to know people through text, email, Twitter, all these other things, and you've never seen them. So you actually got to, you know, you were in London, and you and Alex got together and got to meet, which is fabulous.
I took the train out to Berkhamsted, and she bought lunch for me, and I went to their hospice there, which is an amazing hospice. And we'll talk a little bit about the government finances things there, too. It's pretty interesting.
Wow, fascinating. I'll be looking forward to hearing about it. Okay, Mom, let me introduce her. As you said, our guest is Alex James, and we're going to talk today about living with bereavement. Alex James lives and works in England and is currently based at a hospice developing specific services for children, supporting children and their families pre- and post-bereavement. She is the author of Living with Bereavement. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Alex. It's great to have you on the show today.
Hi, Gloria.
Talk to you after meeting with you and going out to your facility. And talk to our audience a little bit about, you know, you kind of have dual things. You've written this wonderful book, Living with Bereavement, which we'll be talking about. It's a very comprehensive book with a lot of areas in it. And you're doing some wonderful creative things. And you, part of it is a hospice there, right?
I've been very fortunate. Here in the United Kingdom, we have the BBC. And the BBC fund through a program called Children in Need. They put on a wonderful program and encourage people. All our celebrities get together and put on this show, and they encourage the public to pay money. and that money goes to provide people like me in organizations. And the Hospice of St. Francis in Berkhamsted is a very forward-thinking, it's a brand new hospice, and they're very innovative, and they have facilitated some of my work, which is which people are saying is quite groundbreaking and different, and is proving itself to work very well with children pre and post bereavement.
Well, talk a little bit about what is groundbreaking about your work.
Well, I think previously I know that organizations that work with children generally post bereavement use a lot of creativity and art, and I know that children who are disabled have been involved with animals. Animal assisted therapy is a proven way of working. What I'm doing is I'm bringing animals to work with bereaved children. We're at the hospice, we've been able to facilitate having ponies up there, and the children that are finding great difficulty talking are able to communicate with the animals and talk to us whilst they are involved with the animals. So, because children are great multitaskers anyhow, and we can bring in all these different ways of working. We use music and art. And
yeah, let's go slowly with this now, because you are doing some wonderful things now. Now, with the animals, would the children actually take care of them and brush them and things like that, or?
Well, the idea was that we started with us taking one small pony up to visit a dying mother, and the mother engaged very well with the pony, and the children were able to have that hands-on experience. The pony actually went into the room with the mother.
Wow.
And we were able to take photographs, and it was a very lovely occasion for them. It brought back lots of memories of when Mum had been very well. And
you know, if you have any photographs of that, Alex, it'd be wonderful to put on our Facebook, wouldn't it, Heidi?
It would, and Alex is an author, so you can also go to Open to Hope and read some articles that she's written about these kind of things.
Right.
So I'm so fascinated that you brought a pony into the room. How incredible.
I think that was agreeable, because I think, you know, I'm very fortunate that the hospice, the particular hospice that I'm working at, has been very, very open-minded and facilitated a lot of this work that I'm doing. You know, I'm very client-led. And what happened was the children were able to have these photographs of their mother with the pony around the bed, and the mother died shortly afterwards. And those photographs have become very, very important parts of their memory work. And we also had a young father who was terminally ill, and we were able to bring in a pony, and his daughter was able to show him on that pony how she could trot and ride around, and that was a really lovely day where the whole family were there, and there were lots of hugs, and I kind of have this theory that if traumatic, awful events can traumatize us and be remembered, then if we can put good events in as well, they can be remembered in the same way, and so the association of the pony and the hospice will bring something lovely for those children in their memories in the future, rather than it being a hushed journey of dying. You know, we try to get the parents living until they die, and the children to be very involved in that. And what's happening with the work is that the children that are having this kind of support and are being very involved pre-death are actually doing very well afterwards and not needing so much afterwards.
Now, that's really wonderful. And I'm just picturing, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking of our audience, thinking about a hospice in New York City or something. Pretty hard to bring a pony in. But you are in such, that hospice is in the most beautiful country setting, Heidi. And the rooms all look out on grass and yard and countryside.
Wow. But Mom, I'm thinking, I want to interrupt for a minute, because I'm thinking in New York you couldn't bring a pony, but you could bring a small dog or cat.
Right. Are you doing anything with smaller animals, Alex?
Yes, I have two little puppies that I take in regularly, and we also have what we call a pack dog, a dog that has been specially trained to work with people, and it belongs to our chef at the hospice actually, and is around for patients to fuss. And as I say, the hospice, we're all about living until you die there, so you know we allow people to bring in their pets and have them with them, and children are there and families stay over, and it is, as you say, it's a really lovely place. It's in the middle of, I think it's probably in the middle of about 4 acres of countryside, and it sits on the hill there. And
wonderful. And the pony is kind of a miracle pony. Tell Heidi about how you found the pony.
I was going out for a walk with my girlfriend, and I was on the way to meet her, and it was a really cold day. It was a year ago last January. It'd been snowing, and all of a sudden, trotting down the road was this little pony.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think he's all of 2'6" high, which is about 28 inches high. And I got a dog lead out of my car and thought, well, who does he belong to? And it turned out that he had been dumped. He's a stallion, so I don't know whether he had just, you know, been dumped because he was a little bit aggressive or what, but he certainly isn't aggressive here. He's lovely, and he's very happy living with me here at my home, and has done this wonderful work going up to the hospice to meet the children. And we called him Vernon.
Yeah, so amazing little story. Well, tell me now, are you able to follow the children? How long can you follow them after, and do you have any special things you do with them?
Yes, we have an open door policy. I think the children, you know, as they, I can kind of illustrate this, if I may, by saying that I have a young man that I worked with when he was 13 and again when he was 21. And what he said to me at 21 was that at 13 he knew his father had died, but he didn't realize it was going to be forever. And so I think children have different needs at different times, and so it would be quite inappropriate to say, well, you know, this child had this support for this long and won't need any more. And so we have an open door, and children can keep dipping in and out as they do, as and when they need the support. But what happens at the moment in an ideal situation is that we meet the children pre-bereavement, and then we, after death, we're with them through the funeral. We support the family with all of those things and afterwards, and then we continue to visit until the children don't really feel they need it anymore, and that's our goal, that the children say.
Well, now, yeah, and I know people are thinking, now, how does this get paid for? This is through this program that celebrities put on and money is given, and it's through the government?
My job gets paid for. I'm a paid 18-hour post. But obviously I have to donate quite a few hours to do the work that I'm doing. I have a team of 12 volunteers who work with me, and they are all highly trained professional people who have worked with children and then give their time to work with me. The Hospice of St. Francis relies heavily on volunteers. We have, I think, nearly 1,000 volunteers now working there.
Wow.
We have 10 open beds, I believe, and a team of fantastic nurses and doctors. But we are totally funded by the community and to run the hospice. Well, I think the government gives something like 10%. I could be wrong on my figures, but it's around 10%. And the community raised nearly £3 million every year to keep the hospice going.
Wow,
so
wonderful.
That by,
so $3 million and, yeah.
And we have eBay.
I was going to say, Heidi, they have a whole room full of eBay products that people give and they sell them on eBay.
Fabulous.
It was a fantastic visit, actually, that, wasn't it, Gloria? Because I was able to show you around and showed you the eBay, which is...
and people volunteered all this material from the community and they sell it on eBay, which I think is so great. Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit about some of the projects. I know you do fabulous things with art, and I'm thinking if you could talk a little bit about some of your projects and what families could actually do with family members, mm-hmm. with kids.
Well, one of the things that struck me in other work that I've done, and, you know, obviously I work in lots of different areas, not only at the hospice, but one of the things that children will say to me on a regular basis, and I think I spoke to you about this, Gloria, it's mainly about dads, that as they start to get older, they start to say things like, I can't remember how big my dad was. I've grown and I can't remember how he was. So some of the work that I started to do was to draw around the parent and to make a life-size picture of them. Mm. And that as a keepsake.
So they actually can lie down on the...
Yeah, when they're well enough, get them to lay down on the floor and draw around them. And obviously, if this is post-bereavement, that's not so possible, but then we could perhaps figure out how tall Dad was and draw a life-size picture of him, which is the work that I was doing.
You know what? We need to go to break now. When we get back, I want to talk to you about some more of these projects you're doing, because you're very creative and very... very wonderful. It's great, Alex. So we're talking to Alex James. I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. Alex is here from the UK on the phone. We're excited to have her on, and she's one of our authors for the Open to Hope Foundation. So if you go to Open to Hope alexjames.com, you will be able to go to Alex James and read some of the articles that she's written for us. And she's also written Living with Bereavement, which is a great book that we'll be talking about. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Have you lost a loved one and are wondering where to turn? Feeling overwhelmed by your grief? Join the thousands of people who have found hope and comfort as a part of the Open to Hope online community. It's free, it's safe, it will lighten your burden. Just type in opentohope.com and join our circle of support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking with Alex James, author of Living with Bereavement. Welcome back, Alex and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Alex, when we went to break, I was promising our audience that we were talking about art and how you're in England, first of all, if people are just tuning in at Berkhamsted, right? Did I say it right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And you're how far out from London? Took me about an hour. In what direction?
North.
North of London. And it took me about an hour to get there. Anyway, we had a great time together out there and going to the hospice and everything. And Alex has this fabulous room in the hospice, which is lovely and bright and where she works with the kids and families. It's really, really quite wonderful. But anyway, you were talking about how sometimes you would even have the person, if they're still living, you know, draw the outline of the person, and then what would you do with that?
Well, then this particular family, they made a life-size collage of their father, who was at that time dying, and that was on the wall of his room there. And I'd intended it to be a work of art for the children, but actually it was wonderful because all the visitors that came started to add little bits of art, and it became a wonderful piece for them to then keep after his death. And it's just a lovely painting of him and everything that they added to it. And then after bereavement, with some of the children that aren't really talking a lot or haven't had that support pre-bereavement, I will quite often get sheets of paper and fill a whole wall and ask them to paint how they're feeling. And whilst they're doing that, they'll be talking to me about what they're painting and what's happening. You know, that again, that's very, very useful way of working. We use lots of different ways of enabling children to tell their stories and to continue the bonds with their deceased loved ones and to make meaning of the journey that they're going through.
I love all this, Alice, because I was telling you my mom at break, and you, and my mother already knows this from all the work we do. One of the biggest concerns that parents have when I give workshops to parents is that their children are not talking. And they'll come in and say to me, Heidi, my children are not talking, so therefore I don't think I'm really concerned that they're not grieving. Now, for those parents, what would you say that they could do to facilitate expressions of grief? And maybe it doesn't need to be talking. I don't know.
I think that children have their own way. They dip in quick. We call it happy sad. From my perspective of working, they can be happy and sad at the same time, and they can appear not to be in the same place as we think that we are, you know, when we're so deep in it and we're in it for a long time, they'll dip in and out. And so based on that, what we do is we try to encourage them to write their own stories about their loved one. And quite often in a family, you'll get three or four children, and they've all got a different view of their mum or their dad or their brother that's died. And one will say, oh, he liked that. And the other will say, no, he didn't. He liked that. So what we try to do is let each child have their own memory, and we give the value to each child's own memory and say, well, that's your perception of them, and that's okay, that's how they were. And we get them to write their stories and take photographs and put them together in a book. And they enjoy doing that. And, of course, while they're doing this wonderfully created book, which is going to be a keepsake, they also talk to our support workers about what they're actually putting in there and when that was taken and who that person is and what their feelings are. And that seems to, and that we work like this with children up to the age of 18, and they seem to really enjoy doing it, and those books become very precious, and it opens that forum for conversation, you know, with parents as well, because we sometimes have parents making a book with the child as well.
You know, that's interesting, because I was just thinking, for people out there who are concerned about their kids, you might ask an uncle or an aunt or somebody if you, you know, I myself don't think I had the energy to do that, and plus I'm not a picture bookmaker, my husband is more so, but I think you could ask other family members to do some things with kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to ask other family members that they have. I think one of the things that we seem to work very hard at is almost putting the person that's died aside and trying to get over it in some way and trying to fill the space and move on. And actually, what I'm thinking is healthier, is continuing that bond, acknowledging the space, and keeping those stories of that person going, you know, the stories that made them who they are, and handing those down, because that's all part of our heritage, isn't it, and who we are. Somebody's been in your life, they've touched your life, and to carry those stories forward and to be okay with that and okay with the space as well that they've left, and not try to fill it or replace the person with other things.
So what if somebody's had, you've got somebody who's had a traumatic event, something traumatic happened, what would you do with that?
I usually, you know, if I'm working with children, it's been a road death or they've witnessed something awful like that, I usually will go and, 9 times out of 10, they'll be playing a game or doing something else. I usually get down to their level and just ask them, what happened? What happened to you? What's gone on here? And because of the honesty, and I think that's the key word there, to be honest and to talk to children in an age-appropriate way, and to not, I think I always say to people that I'm working with, it's not our business to hurt children. What we want to know is if they're hurting, and it's our business to make sure that they don't fill in any gaps with fantasy, because that's potentially more dangerous than the truth and more hurtful than the truth sometimes. So we have to gently find out what they know, how they're seeing things, and make little adjustments in an age-appropriate way, so that as they're growing older, we can feed them bits more of information and just hold that. And we can use all sorts of other ideas and ways. You know, I do walk talk as well, where we just go for a walk in the woods and talk about stuff, and not always about that subject, but introduce it gently and then allow the children to move on.
And I think walk talks could be amazing, Alex, because my mom and I have done a lot of shows where we've talked about how if you're side by side with each other, shoulder to shoulder, especially with boys, and not staring at someone, sometimes it's easier for children to converse and talk.
Yes, and also, you know, the children are great multitaskers, and I think, you know, because I'm certainly not a very good multitasker, but, you know, a lot of the kids I work with are playing on the Wii while I'm talking to them, and that's okay, you know, because they actually do, most children have this ability to be able to listen to three or four things at the same time, and so we can do a lot of work if we can just play and walk and
that's good for parents, I think. Sometimes parents feel like everything needs to be turned off, shut down, and you need to stare at me if we're going to have a conversation. So what we're saying, it sounds like what we're saying to parents out there is, if your kid is playing on the Wii and you're having a conversation about a loss, that's okay.
That is okay,
I love that walk talk idea. Well, Alex, I wanted to say your book, Living with Bereavement, it's a great book, and it's a very nice read with nice examples. But you do cover more than just children. You cover a lot of
a lot of area in this book. And I was interested in one area that you talk about, where you talk about ambivalent relationships. You know, what if you've had your spouse die and you were ambivalent? I mean, it's not like, wow, he's finally gone or she's finally gone and now I don't have to worry about it anymore. What's your take on that?
I think that what we have to do is allow ourselves to be who we are with the deceased, because that's who we were with them when they were alive, and we have to give ourselves permission to have all sorts of feelings and not beat ourselves up for how we might feel afterwards or what we think people expect of us. I think sometimes assumptions from outside can put pressure on people to be a certain way or to feel that they've got to behave in a certain way. And I think it's actually quite healthy to say, actually, that isn't how it is, or that isn't how I'm feeling. I'm feeling this, and, you know, that's what that relationship was to you. And I think that's really important that we all hold the relationship with the person that's died to what it was to us in life, because that's what it was. That's the reality.
You know, I think sometimes with ambivalent relationships, they took a lot of our energy and a lot of our thought processes when we're angry with people or when we're upset with, say, I know a lot of parents are upset with drug addicted kids or, you know, where suicide's involved and all that kind of thing. I think sometimes people are surprised at the enormity of their feelings after divorce or, you know, when they're not even living with them, people, you know, make contact with them and they are surprised at the level of loss they're feeling.
But that's how people feel, isn't it? And I think there's this thing, isn't there, about glorifying the dead and making them perfect. And actually, we none of us are perfect. And, you know, with things like suicide, when that happens, the amount of feelings that are left and the stigmas associated with it and the hurt, and those feelings have to be expressed. And I think, from my perspective, I'd say it's about if you're with someone who's going through something like that, it's bearing to hear it and bearing to be with it. And allow people to be how they're feeling and to express those feelings, because once that stuff's out, better memories can come in.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're holding all that hurt, it's very difficult to remember better days, isn't it?
And the thing is that people have to be reminded of is that even if you had an ambivalent relationship, and even if you had a relationship where you fought all the time, it doesn't mean that you didn't completely love that person. We can love people and still have an ambivalent relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, people can get your book through Amazon, I assume, right?
Yes, they can. And they can go to my website as well.
Tell us what your website is.
It's www.bereavement.co.uk.
Great. And you can go to Alex's site, and you can also read all the great things she's put on our site. Alex, do you want to mention your new book that you're coming out with and why you're doing it?
I have, at the moment, with a colleague, we have written a children's song and story book, which will be, it's in draft form at the moment. We have a children's choir singing the song, and I'm hoping that will be the children's remembrance song for bereavement.
I love that idea. Isn't that great, Heidi? They have a children's choir that are singing the song. You wrote it, right, Alex, with your friend?
Yeah, I did. And I wrote it with the hope that we can raise money for the Children's Remembrance Centre, which is the bereavement centre that I am hoping to fund here in the UK. You know, we start these things small and watch them grow, and that's
right.
That's
and animals will be very involved in that, correct?
Yes, we will have a thing called the Rabbit Hop, where we're going to have some rabbits and bales of straw, and children can go and sit in with the rabbits. I was observing some children at a bereavement project some weeks ago where they were happily chasing the rabbits around and trying to pick them up and cuddle them. And you know, there was a lot of joy in that as well. And I think that they're quite a good animal, along with the puppies and the ponies that they can groom and have a sit on. And
fabulous. Well, Alex, thank you so much for calling us all the way from the UK, and thanks for being one of our authors, and it's just been great.
I love all the creative things you're doing. They are fabulous.
Thank you.
They are, and thanks so much for everything, and I'll be in touch when I get back to the UK, and let us know what you're up to. And we'll also keep everybody posted on your new book and when you get it out and how it's coming.
And I look forward to seeing you both here.
Great.
Take care.
Thanks for being on, bye-bye. And stay tuned for after our break when we'll continue to talk about living with bereavement. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. Please visit us on our website, the Open to Hope site. Stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This podcast is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, which also offers you a free monthly e-newsletter containing current articles, book and movie reviews, as well as podcast schedules. Just go to opentohope.com, click on newsletter, and receive your monthly newsletter filled with hope and support. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, this is Dr. Heidi Horsley, host of Healing the Grieving Heart. Have you lost meaning and purpose in your life since your loved one died? Does each day feel like an effort? You do not have to go through this difficult time alone. As a bereaved sibling and licensed psychologist with over 15 years' experience, I will work with you in a collaborative, supportive way. If you live in the New York tri-state area, you can contact me at 917-338-6396 or email me at drheidihorsley@gmail.com. That's drheidihorsley@gmail.com. To learn more about my private practice, visit my website at www.drheidihorsley.com. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Hi, Anne. This is Gloria Orsley. Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart, everybody. So, Anne, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Gloria.
Good morning. I told our audience up front that somebody from the Andre Sobel River of Life Foundation was going to be on, and this is great. Here you are. And we've got Instant Messenger, and I kind of missed it on my screen. So why don't you, Anne, what's your last name? I forgot.
Swire.
Oh, yeah. Anne Swire is on. And you want to tell our audience a little bit about the Andre Sobel River of Life Foundation first.
Sure. Our foundation provides single parents with the gift of time with their children who are suffering from catastrophic or life-threatening illness. And we do that by paying expenses, urgent expenses, that the family has that they're simply not able to afford because of the stress and life changes of their child's illness. So, for example, if a single parent has a child who's diagnosed with cancer and they must either quit their job or take unpaid leave to be with their child, we want to make sure that their family otherwise stays stable. And so we assist them by paying their rent or their mortgage, utilities, food, transportation to the hospital, whatever it is that they need. So that
that's so fantastic. It's those things that don't get funded quickly. And Valerie Sobel, who founded it, did it in honor of her son, Andre.
Exactly.
Yeah, wonderful foundation. Well, tell us what you're doing as a you're doing a contest, right?
Exactly. Well, I was listening to your previous guest, and she was talking about the stories, or making sure that you continue to tell stories of people that have died, and continuing to honor them that way. What we do, and this is our ninth year of our annual Andre Sobel Award, is that we ask teenagers, kids ages 12 to 21, to tell us their stories of what it was like to be a patient. And this is a national contest. We usually have several hundred teens that apply. And the first place award is $5,000 for the winner to use however they wish. Our hope is that if they consider themselves a survivor of a catastrophic illness, whether it's cancer or something else, that's good enough for us to hear their story. And we have a panel of judges that judges the essays. And then those that are sort of the most compelling become the winners.
The Great.
Reason that we do this is that we know that a child's illness causes isolation from their friends and family, causes huge shifts in dynamics between themselves and those that love them. And we ask them to tell us in their most authentic, real, unvarnished way the truth about what it means to be a patient and what it is that they would wish or want others to know about that.
That's fantastic. So how do people tell their kids about doing it? Or I actually sent your email to my granddaughter, and we put something on our site, thegriefblog.com, so you can take a look at it there. Or you can go to Andre Sobel River Life dot, is that right, what it is, dot com?
It's www.andreriveroflife.org.
Okay, great.
And there's a section called Participate, and then under that is the Andre Sobel Award. And
great.
The contest is open now, and the submissions are being taken until the 1st of April.
Fantastic. Well, tell Valerie I said hello, and thanks for calling in. And good to
talk
to you.
Thank you, Gloria.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, that's a great project, isn't it, Heidi?
Yeah, I love things about stories. You know, after 9/11, they did something called Storyboard in Manhattan, and they had all these people come and tell the stories, and then they archived them for forever.
That's great. Well, Heidi, why don't you introduce our guest today? We've got a great guest, and I'm looking forward to continuing talking about living with bereavement.
Very good. So as my mom said, for those of you just joining us, we are talking today about living with bereavement. And our first guest was Alex James, and our second guest today will be Scott Nagel. Scott Nagel worked for 18 years in the rural ministry in Minnesota and has been a hospital chaplain. Scott is currently working for the new magazine, Caregiving in America. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Nice to be on with you.
It's great to have you. Thanks for chipping in. And I was telling you on the show, we really want to talk a little bit about spirituality. We're trying to, we've got a lot of audience out there who are interested in looking at that and wondering, you know, how their spirituality does fit into your life. So you've worked in those areas. What do you see from people who have suffered a loss? You know, one of the things I see is them saying why and questioning God. Has that been your experience?
You know, as a part of a loss experience, questioning God is certainly a part of that. You know, I really appreciated my work, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book, The Stages of Grief. And, you know, in that book, you know, she talks about, you know, the shock, the absolute shock of losing someone. And then we get a little bit further on. And as a pastor, it was really interesting to me that questioning of God doesn't always happen right away. It can take weeks and months. And you go back home, for example, and your spouse has died, for example, and you can see the chair where they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then those questions start to come up. You know,
mm-hmm.
Why did God allow this? Why did God cause this? And those are deep, deep spiritual questions. You know, my wife and I right now are reading the book of Job in the Bible, the Holy Bible. And it's an amazing story about exactly what we're talking about, the questioning of God.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find from that book, you know, first and foremost, it's all right to question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all right to say, God, why did that happen?
You know, it's interesting because when my son was killed, I didn't find the theology to be particularly helpful, and I told what was it, Reverend Ritter, who was on our show at one time, I told him that, and he said I said the people were great, but the theology was not great, and you know I didn't find it helpful, and he said the people are the religion, which I thought was interesting. I hadn't thought of it from that point of view, but nobody can tell you why.
No, you know when I ministered to people. You know, I can give you all the explanations in the world why things happen, but eventually, you have to find the answer that's best for you, which is the answer that holds true for you and brings meaning in the midst of that darkness and that loss. And
Scott, how you said in the book of Job it said it's okay to question.
Mm-hmm,
it's okay
is.
To ask why. And what about, because people feel so guilty about questioning, and they also feel really guilty that they're angry at God.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of our heritage, part of our culture, part of our upbringing, you know, and you were saying, you know, the theology didn't ring true with you. And I think at times theology doesn't ring true for us. And so what happens is we have this disconnect. You know, this disconnect. I feel angry. I feel angry with God, but I shouldn't feel angry.
Right. Well, that idea early on when I'm suffering and I'm reading, God will not give you more than you can bear.
Right. Right.
I'm like, oh really? I don't think I can bear this.
That's a really good point, Mom, because you do always hear that. You'll never get more than you can handle. And when you have the death of a child or a sibling, you're like, I think this is more than I can handle right now.
And it often is. I mean, it often feels so overwhelming. I mean, so overwhelming, you know, the feeling of a loss of a child. That's probably a best example. Loss of a child is probably the most mm-hmm. profound feeling a parent could ever have.
A parent could have, but, you know, if you've lost a spouse,
mm-hmm.
You know, as Heidi, you know, says and our friends have said on the show, that it's the loss that you know that's knocked you down on the floor,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is the strongest for you.
Yeah, and what I've, get back at your question, what I have found is so often, I've heard your previous speaker a little bit too, and what happens so often, at least in my experience of rural America, is that we bring, we want to do something for those who have lost somebody. We want to do something. And in doing something, we do some things well and some things we don't do well. The things we do well, for example, are bringing the hot dishes and helping them, shop for groceries and, having a cup of coffee with them. And the things we don't do well, is we try to, like you said, we try to use scripture or theology. And we just grasp straws,
I used to work at the University of Rochester Medical Center, and one of the pastors there said something to me which I thought was so profound. It was, Gloria, don't try to be profound.
mm-hmm.
That's very good.
Yeah, because, when people bring in stuff like, well, at least they're in heaven and that they're in a better place, I mean, that early on is actually not that helpful. Those kind of little cliches that people are trying to tell you to help you actually are not helpful, because it kind of minimizes what you're going through, and you want them here on the earth right now. The whole belief system of the afterlife is not helpful early on. At least
no,
I didn't find it to be helpful.
It's not. You're right. And in what we don't do that well. I often tell people, when you go to visit, your neighbor or your friend who's lost a loved one, don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say anything. Just simply sit there and listen. And if they don't say anything either, just sit there and listen. And even the silence, give them time and space to open up. My experience is when people have lost loved ones, the people will often come in and I'll do all the talking.
Right, because you're nervous, and so
right.
you're da-da-da-da.
Yeah. You do all the talking, and you're going, oh, but it's hard. It runs against our nature. We want to help people, and so we want to talk. But, you can help by simply being there.
Mm-hmm.
Simply being there. And that's,
yeah, in fact, there was somebody that said at Compassionate Friends, before he lost a child, he used to send a condolence card when someone had a loss, and now he sends himself.
Yeah. Yep.
And I loved that.
That's a wonderful gift. A wonderful
mm-hmm.
gift.
Mm-hmm. A gift of being there.
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you think the biggest challenge is for, say, a widow?
Oh, they're the biggest challenge. I call it disorientation.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by disorientation
mm-hmm.
is their world is no longer orientated the way it used to be.
They've lost their anchor in a way for some
yeah,
people.
And what I mean by that is you did everything with your spouse. You went to every one of your child's ball games.
Mm-hmm.
You talked to your daughter who died in a car accident every Friday night. It's a disorientation. And what I mean by disorientation again is that life is not the same.
Yeah. Well, it's time for us to go to break. And
sure.
When we come back from break, I want to continue to talk about this, because I'd like to talk about the disorientation, and what I'd like to talk about is how do we orient ourselves?
Okay.
How do we reconnect
mm-hmm.
with these kinds of things, and talk about some tips that we might
sure.
want to help people who are kind of in the, there was the before they died and the after they died, and here I am, and now how do I find my bearings again, and how do I live with this bereavement? I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. You should remember all these shows are archived on thegriefblog.com, and we have hundreds of articles on the Open to Hope Foundation, new ones every day. So we hope you'll come and join us, and you can also blog in at the Grief Blog and tell us your story. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Whether you are a new or frequent listener to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi's podcasts, the Horsleys value your connection. We invite you to join our Facebook and Twitter circles of support. We'll keep you up to date about Open to Hope Foundation events, new podcasts, and YouTube spots. Just go to Facebook or Twitter and search for Open to Hope. Open to Hope is a charitable foundation. All donations are tax deductible.
Hello, I'm Eric Kipple, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichipple.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking with Scott Nagel about living with bereavement. Welcome back, Scott and Gloria.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Hyde. Well, Scott, when we went to break, you know, you've been a pastoral counselor, and you were talking about disorientation, and
yes.
I promised when we came back we were going to talk
about
reorientation. How do I start?
That's a, you know, that's probably the question that your audience wants to know. I mean, how do you reorientate after being disoriented? And the answer is you have to find your new life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by finding your new life, it's not going to look like the old life. And that's probably the hardest thing for people. It won't look like the old life. So what do I mean? The transition from the old life to the new life takes time. Some of the pieces you take with you, the stories, the memories, but you also start to shape new memories, new stories. And so what you have to do is you have to, I think the orientation starts coming when you see that new life.
I like that. Maybe the visualization, or the possibility. That's an interesting idea, isn't it, Heidi? Seeing the new life.
It is. It is. And I think also part of it is reinvesting in new relationships.
Yes, it is. It is.
Don't you think that some of those new people that you meet who, like maybe say I'm a widow or a widower, I might go to a group or something and I might see possibilities of what other people are doing?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think support groups are marvelous ways of new orientation and new life because you meet people, for example, who are walking the same path as you or parallel path with you. It's a great gift, and it's a wonderful gift in that way for that new life, too.
It's tough, isn't it? You're involved with this new magazine, Caregiving in America,
yes.
And we'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the things that struck me when I knew we were going to talk about this is I know those people out there right now who have been caregiving maybe a year or two. It is tough to give up that life, even though in some ways you probably feel guilty because it's a relief. Somebody's had a long-term illness or Alzheimer's or whatever, and they're finally gone. But that's been your job.
Well, remember when we had Diane Gray on, Mom? She said, my life was so infused with
caregiving my child for so many years that I didn't even know what to do with my time or who I was after he died.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what, so true.
And what are you finding, Scott, with this caregiving in America and thinking about the magazine and all that? Is it hard for people, you know?
It is. You know, there is really no one good source for caregiving in America. And what we're hoping to do with this magazine is be a resource, you know, a resource for the caregivers throughout the country. 65 million Americans are caregivers.
Wow.
I mean, that's like one out of every five people are caregivers. And we're all caregivers throughout our lifetime. I mean, we take care of our children.
Mm-hmm.
We take care of our grandchildren. We take care of our neighbor. You know, we help our spouse who is, you know, dying, for example, he spoke of. We are caregivers throughout our lifetime. And you're so true. And what our magazine is, our real goal of our magazine, our real hope of our magazine, is that here's a tool with stories and with tips and with ideas to how to be a good caregiver while you're going through it, but also, as you bring up, also what do you do afterwards?
Yep.
You know, that's so true.
So what's your thought for people? And you said they've got to reorient, they've got to get a new life. How do I get myself to do it? How do I get up in the morning? You know, how do I do it?
Well, it's you know, I was up at 5:30 this morning, and my first reaction was to pull the covers back over my eyes. And I think that is our reaction. You know, in my role as a pastor, we often get stuck in grief. And what I mean is we get stuck. And grief is the hardest work you'll ever do in your whole life. The hardest work you'll ever do. Not raising kids. It's not working your vocation. It's grief. And so it takes time. And so when...
You know, what occurs to me is when you do take care of other people, you have something to get up for.
You do.
When it's over, okay, now what do I get up for? Now, what did you get? If you just had your spouse die and you want to pull the covers over your head, how do you get out? How do you put your foot out?
Yeah, you know, and I say, today you may stay in bed, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to make that a long-term kind of pattern. You want neighbors and you want friends to say, all right, it's time to get out of bed. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Let's go for coffee. You know, you have to be willing. Here's a challenge. You have to be willing to experience life again, both the hurt and the joy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, you'll never, you know, if you're so afraid of hurt again, you'll never experience the joy. But so that question, how do you get out of bed in the morning? Sometimes you don't. But with the help of neighbors and with friends and caregivers, then maybe you do.
And maybe a little bit of time. Heidi, I was thinking with kids, they have to go to school.
Yeah.
You know, these siblings, don't you think, Heidi, they do have something they have to do.
Right. They actually don't have the luxury of scaling back, in fact. Even if they wanted to, because they have to, like you said, go to school and keep going with their routines.
Yeah, and that's one of the problems for kids is they have to do it, and they can't compute in math or whatever, and they have to do it. Or I was thinking when I'm talking about a spouse, I'm thinking of maybe some of the most difficult maybe for women, the long-term health care givers who have not been working, their job's been taking care of their spouse, or a male who's been taking care of his spouse, and then they really don't have anything to get up for, do they? Yeah.
You know, everything that was part of their life, they poured themselves into caregiving, you know, and that's what they knew, sometimes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that was their life.
Right. And I'm thinking the person they need to caregive now is themselves.
Themselves, right. Exactly.
And so they have to find reasons and find. How do you think the religious community can help them? I mean, you know, one of the things that I, when I was in counseling, used to say to people who were really lost and had moved away from their religion completely, maybe you want to go re-explore the religion of your childhood.
Yeah.
Did you ever recommend that to people going back?
Oh, yes. We learn a lot from our youth, you know, from our younger years, and even a lot about loss and grief in our younger years, too, and about taking care of each other in our younger years.
So that might be a good idea. Well, is your new magazine, it's from Salt Publications, right? Is that on the newsstand yet?
It is. We have sent out 100,000 copies, as a matter of fact. Brand new magazine. We sent it out throughout the country, and you can visit our website at www.caregivinginamerica.com and more information about the magazine there and how to get a hold of that magazine. It's on the website. It's $10 for 12 issues.
Wow.
So it's a real bargain.
Yeah, it is.
$30 for 36 issues, so it's a incredible bargain. And the people who have seen the magazine, who have responded to the magazine, are very thankful. We've gotten comments like, thank you so much. Thank you so much for this magazine who came into my life at the right moment. You know, mom's in the nursing home with Alzheimer's, and dad's having a tough time. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
And I know Kay Falk, this comes from, I guess she's in the publishing business,
yes,
but this really comes from her experience with her own family. I know she said her father died from Alzheimer's, and yep, then her mother had taken care of her grandfather who had lung cancer, and she'd seen it firsthand.
Yeah, and that was the kind of the momentum, the impetus for the magazine. And the more we discovered, the more caregivers who are going through similar kinds of experiences that she was going through, too.
Right. Well, tell her hello, and sorry she couldn't be on the show today, and thank you so much for pinch hitting and coming in. You're a great guy.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be with you today, too. Thank you.
It's been great having you on. Well, you're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Next week, tune in. We're going to talk about messages of hope after loss, and we're going to talk with Catherine Williams, who author of the book, What Can I Say When Words Escape Me, Being Present in Times of Sorrow. And she talks about her tragedy of divorce and the loss of her father and job. And also Pat Murphy is going to be on, and she's an advanced practice nurse. She works with death and dying, and she's involved with ADAC, the Association of Death Educators. And we're looking forward to having you listen in next week. We want you to remember that you do not walk alone. We're here to be with you. And as Heidi and I like to always say, if you've lost your hope, lean on ours till you find it again. And please stay tuned for our show next week. And remember, all these shows are archived on thegriefblog.com. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley, Scott and Alex. Thank you for helping people live with bereavement.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.